mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest, make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
All right, we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. J.R. Moore here on Wednesday, the 13th day of June. Prepper tip of the day. I encourage all of you to own at least one EMP-proof, electromagnetic pulse-proof vehicle, a car or a truck, preferably a truck. You might want to check out U.S. Army surplus 2.5-ton trucks. They're marvelous vehicles and very reasonably priced. A pretty decent one, about $3,500. A really, really nice one, around $5,000. So that's your prepper tip of the day. We have a patient waiting in the green room, my friend Jeff Nyquist. Jeff is a gentleman who began a quest more than 20 years ago to understand and become knowledgeable and eventually become an expert in the true threat posed by international communism to the world, to the West, to the United States. And that's what we're going to talk about, is the threat of international communism to all of us. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, John.
All right. Well, in a geopolitical area, we have some surprise things going on with North Korea coming to the table to sign an agreement to eliminate all their nuclear weapons. I regard it as good news. How about yourself, sir?
Well, I hope that they obey the treaty that they sign. I hope they keep it. In the past, they made agreements with previous presidents, which they haven't kept. President Bush abrogated an agreement that they made because they were cheating. And, of course, they cheated President Clinton rather badly. So we'll have to see. Hopefully we're not giving anything away, but I have to be honest, John, we should have an embargo on all communist countries until they become normalized, as we would say. They become normal countries without dictatorships. But I don't, you know, North Korea. I grieve every time one of our leaders signs a treaty because always they cheat. And I think back in history, you know, whether it's Yalta or the Paris Peace Accords for the Vietnam War, or the previous treaties we've had with Iran and now North Korea, they seem to always cheat. So
that's right. That's right. Well, we need to keep that in mind, so that we'll be on guard to watch out for cheating and then act accordingly if they are caught cheating. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, exactly. What bothers me is that they're escaping the news of the consequences of the current embargo on North Korea, which could actually cause that regime to fall if it keeps going. And I think if that regime fell, it would be positive for the North Korean people, because perhaps it would become unified with the South. Then again, some people feel that if it started to fall, there would be a war. And that, of course, would kill tens of thousands of people. So it's kind of like we're blackmailed into trusting them.
Yeah. Well, we're in a box where we have to trust them on one hand, but on the other, we need to be vigilant, don't we, Jeff? Don't we?
Yeah, always vigilant. Yes.
Oh well. Always. Oh well. Well, we'll hopefully. This will go the right direction. Of course, this young dictator is being given incentives, massive financial incentives, in the form of building beachfront property resorts and condominiums. I'm not sure that's been on the table before, Jeff, at least not to my knowledge. How about you?
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, you know, we'll have to see if any of this is resolved. I mean, the North Korean regime is the most extreme of the communist tyrannies around the world. And for it to take a turn towards this, you know, NEP, as Lenin called it, new economic policy, if he does do that, it will change North Korea. It's hard to imagine how that will go, because the North Korean people have been lied to by their
government.
They
take pity on it. In fact, the average North Korean takes pity on Americans for living in poverty. That's how thoroughly propagandized they are. The only people who have access to the internet in North Korea are high-ranking government and military officials. They're totally clueless about reality in the rest of the world. But building massive resorts and condominiums in North Korea would necessitate dramatic changes also, because that means foreign investment, foreigners. And foreigners won't come there unless they have unrestricted access to the internet, will they?
That's right. How could it work? I mean, you know, it's interesting. I heard in 2001, Dr. Katie Oh, who's a South Korean political scientist who has the distinction of having interviewed more North Korean officials than anybody in the West or anybody in the free world, she gave a talk at the George Bush Center. I was there for the talk, and she explained what the mentality was of these North Korean officials. And the mentality was, unbelievably, they live in a bubble. They live in an alternate reality. And she said they really do believe the propaganda of their government in large part. And she said she tries to tell Western officials this, but Western officials, they kind of don't believe it. They, They don't understand that these people actually do believe their own propaganda. And that makes it very difficult to communicate or talk with them about things because their ideas are so of reality are so, well, you know, anytime you talk to a communist, you see that. You know, communists have things backwards in a lot of areas. But this is extreme because they lie about specific, like you said, America is poor, and here they are starving, and they think we're poorer than they are.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, brilliant. It's brilliant propaganda. I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. The people generating and putting out the North Korean propaganda are brilliant in understanding human nature and human behavior, aren't they, Jeff?
Yeah, they are. But of course, if you wanted to destabilize your own regime, I would think this is the kind of thing you would do. Because once it becomes known from the outside world that you have been lying for all these years, see, there's one of the things about the North Korean regime people don't realize is that Kim's grandfather, Kim Il-sung, now am I getting that right? Kim Il-sung was his father, not his grandfather. The original Kim, help me out.
I can't keep track of the Kims, but
Kim, the grandfather.
Sung.
Kim Il-sung. Okay, I got it right the first time. Kim Il-sung was a Soviet military officer who was given command of the country by Stalin when North Korea was created. Was a man who went throughout North Korea and met with every family in the country. I mean, he literally spent 40 years going from house to house, meeting everybody. He could have breakfast, lunch, and dinner at multiple houses every day. I mean, this guy was a working dictator, and he'd have himself his picture taken with each family so that everybody felt a connection to him. And so that they believed him, and he was like a member of their family, you see. And, I mean, it's a relatively small country, but still, that's millions of people still. That's an incredible feat to have done. And it is this connectedness that the people in North Korea feel to the dictator and to the dictator's family that's made this regime successful, in successful in the sense that it's lasted all this time, even though it's miserable and the people are in poverty and they're lied to. And if these people discover that they've been lied to and that it was a trick, it was all a trick, you know, it's almost like someone in your family lying to you. It's a betrayal, unlike it would if a stranger did it. So I think it's going to be very interesting if they do open up. This is one of the reasons I think they haven't, why North Korea, when the rest of the communist world adopted forms of capitalism or state capitalism, well, technically it already is state capitalism, but they adopted all these different liberalization. It was interesting to see that they were able to make the adjustment without violence. But I'm not sure what will happen in North Korea if they really seriously do this. That's one of the reasons why some people like myself have a hard time believing that they seriously will follow through on any of it.
Right, right. Well, it would be a sea change, and we're looking at several million very, very angry people to find out they've been lied to their entire lives, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it would be.
Well, Jeff, I know you're working on a new article for your website that may end up becoming a book. What's the status of that, sir?
Well, remember we talked about Pearl Harbor and George Marshall last week.
Right.
I found out a detail in my research that will amaze you. George Marshall, as you may know, on the morning of Pearl Harbor, he delayed a message to Hawaii, caused it to be delayed so that General Short did not receive it. a message they could have put fighters in the air over Hawaii. Anyway, George Marshall, when they asked him why he couldn't be reached earlier in the morning of December 7th, Washington time, he said he was horseback riding. Well, he changed his testimony the second time that he was asked, and he said that he was at home with his wife. Now, there's a third version of where he was that morning, and it comes from a book that I have ordered. It's a very old book. It was a book about Maxim Litvinov, who had been the foreign minister of the Soviet Union, but who was then the ambassador to the United States from the Soviet Union. And Mr. Litvinov, the story is out of his diary, allegedly. And when I see the book, I'll be able to confirm this or not. But but it claimed that morning, December 7th, according to Litvinov's diary, George Marshall was at the airport meeting the Soviet ambassador on the morning of December 7th.
No kidding. That's incredibly important. Incredibly important.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I'm really bowled over when I found that documentation. I had to see it myself. So I will keep you guys up informed on that. There's so many details about George Marshall. I did not know that they literally cut off all replacements to the American armies fighting in France in late 44, in the fall of 44, in the late fall of 44, about the time of the Battle of the Bulge started. I didn't know they cut them off for the rest of the war. And here, the biggest battle of the war that we fought was the Battle of the Bulge, which started on December 16th, 1944. And, you know, what Eisenhower and Bradley had to do to get reinforcements is they had what they call comeouts, where they got cooks and truck drivers and bottle washers. They even formed a number of regiments of black recruits because the blacks were driving the transport vehicles to keep the army in supply, and they were putting them into regiments and giving them rifles. There were all kinds of, to explain to the audience, in a German division, Wehrmacht division, there were 60% of the men were fighting men, and 40% of the men were support roles. In an American division of World War II, it was the opposite. It was only 40% that were fighting and 60% were in support. So they had a lot of manpower if they wanted to put some of those support people into the front lines. And that's how they managed their replacements. And it is really incredible to me that basically George Marshall so arranged the organization of the United States Army and the new people coming into it as the war went on so that our divisions in Eastern France were not, in Belgium, were not getting any troops, new replacement troops. It just staggers my mind. What was he trying to do? What possible excuse? And there were two reasons that were given. One was that it was a political reason that the American people could not accept a certain level of casualties. So the troops were being, the replacements were not available to prevent them from becoming casualties, if you can imagine such a rationale. And the other reason was that they had to send all available men to the Pacific for the buildup of the invasion of Japan, Operation Olympic. Which is also crazy. The second reason contradicts the first, because the invasion of Japan, by the way, which General Marshall said would only cost 70,000 lives, or 70,000 casualties, I think was the figure, was estimated later would cost 1.2 million casualties and 400,000 American lives.
Well,
and so how can you say you were limiting losses? Yeah.
Right. Well, it's amazing that 72 years after these events, these facts are coming out here, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, these facts have been available, and nobody made anything out of them. And of course, you fought in Vietnam, and people saw these kind of things in the Vietnam War. These kind of, you know, the who could trust the army, you know, in terms of what it was really up to and what sense the orders they gave the troops made. You know, you think, well, that's the kind of thing they did in Vietnam and they've done in Iraq, right, in Afghanistan. But no, this is the tradition now of the U.S. Army, thanks to George Marshall, is that we don't give the right kind of support to our troops in terms of who they're fighting. We don't orient them properly. We don't have a proper strategy to win the war. Here's another fact about Marshall that shocked me. When the Normandy invasion was being planned, and Marshall proposed that a number of paratroop divisions be dropped on Paris to attack the German headquarters in Paris, military headquarters, to assist the invasion. Well, of course, that would have been a massive slaughter of our paratroopers, because Paris is very far away from those beaches. There's no way they can be supported. They're light infantry against panzer divisions, which would undoubtedly respond from the reserve to attack them. And instead of the 3,000 people we lost on the beaches, 3,000-4,000 people, we would have lost, that day, those paratroopers. Yeah, they would have disrupted the German headquarters, but a paratroop division is more than 12,000 men.
Was that the plan? Was that the plan to drop an entire division in Paris?
Well, he was going to drop more than one division on Paris, and that was what Marshall wanted to do. Of course, even Eisenhower, who wasn't a military genius, said, no, we can't do that. But what a diabolical thing to propose in the first place, even suggest that you could use paratroopers in that way.
It is.
So I'm continuing to investigate. I want to know what role Marshall had in influencing the disastrous Operation Market Garden, where the British and Americans dropped paratroopers on top of two German panzer divisions. That were hidden in Holland. So, you know, and that, of course, was a terrible loss for the Western Allies. And then you have to wonder if this man, General Marshall, is secretly meeting with the Soviet ambassador. Is he giving the Russians our battle plan? And was Stalin then passing those battle plans to the Germans so that they could defeat our forces?
Well, those are excellent questions, and I certainly don't have the answers.
Yeah. How did the Germans know to position two panzer divisions where we were exactly going to drop, what was it, three or four paratroop divisions and glider divisions we dropped in Holland in Operation Market Garden? So how many of our men's lives were lost because of this man, George Marshall? I don't know that we have the right reckoning.
It's hard to say. It's really hard to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. So, yeah, it's. I think that we have. I think the context, the understanding of our own history, understanding of who various communist spies were, and I want to mention again that it was Senator Joseph McCarthy who brought up the record of George Marshall in a speech in 1951. And, of course, they were looking into spies in the U.S. State Department. They had found a large nest of Soviet agents there. And, of course, Marshall had been the Secretary of State for a number of years in the late 1940s, was then Dean Acheson took over for him. And, of course, McCarthy talked about Dean Acheson, too, and that there was something terribly wrong with the State Department and what they did. And for the audience that doesn't know what George Marshall did in his mission to China before he became Secretary of State, was that he basically pulled the rug out from under Chiang Kai-shek, the Chinese government of the Republic of China, and empowered Mao by what he did there. And we who were supporting the Kuomintang and the Chinese army, suddenly we not only were not giving them weapons, we were embargoing them of weapons while the Russians were arming Mao, even though Stalin had promised he wouldn't. They were arming Mao, and so the balance of power in the Chinese Civil War changed to the communists, and the communists took over China by 1949. And that was, George Marshall did that. And many people could say, well, he did it because he was, you know, naive. Well,
hardly. This is a very worldly, knowledgeable man, hardly naive.
Right. Yeah, it's not. He knew exactly, I believe he knew exactly what he was doing, because I've read enough now about him. I've been studying for a period of weeks now. I know enough about George Marshall to know that he was very savvy. He understood warfare. He understood strategy. He understood who was who in the international realm. And he was the one that pushed so hard for the what was called the Second Front by a cross-channel invasion of France. And that was what Stalin wanted. Stalin demanded it. Stalin said that the Allies weren't really supporting him unless they invaded France. And of course, as many of your listeners may know, the British General Staff and Winston Churchill wanted us to invade through the Balkans, the southern strategy. Because why? Because we could prevent all those countries in Central Europe and the Balkans from becoming communist, from being taken over by the Red Army. Winston Churchill knew that with the Russians, possession was nine-tenths of the law. We knew that if Soviet troops got in there, those countries would be converted into communist countries, and it would be dreadful tyranny for the people of Eastern Europe, people like those in the Balkan countries, like Romania and Yugoslavia and Bulgaria. So the British were pushing this invasion from the south through Yugoslavia. And of course, Marshall was against it. And in fact, Marshall proposed that we invade France in September of 1942. And there's a famous reenactment. People can find it on YouTube. It's a reenactment of the meeting in which Eisenhower and the other American generals under Marshall, all of Marshall's proteges and friends, were confronted the British and said, we don't want to fight Rommel in Africa. We want to invade France. And Churchill and his generals pointed out that it would be suicide, that every American and every British soldier landed in France at that time would become a casualty. And basically, Eisenhower tells them, well, that's fine. That would be worth it. We have to take the pressure off the Russians now. And of course, Churchill turned to his generals and said, would it be worth it if every single one of your men were a casualty? And the British generals shook their heads and said, no, this is not acceptable. And the Americans, basically implying that the British were cowards, stormed out of the meeting. This is how it's depicted in a reenactment online. And this is, of course, the Americans had to give in to the British. The British were not going to suicide their army in 1942. But you see, who wanted that outcome? Who would have wanted the American and British armies to be destroyed in France in 1942? Well, of course, Stalin, because Stalin was going to beat Hitler no matter what happened. He had the resources. He had the ability to beat Hitler. It was just a matter
of time.
Hold that thought,
Jeff. We got a bottom of the hour break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We're continuing our Energy Cleaner promotion, which began August of 2016. In this promotion, you get to buy an Energy Cleaner $70 off retail and a mattress pad 10% off retail. $200 of the purchase price of the Energy Cleaner goes to Republic Broadcasting. This is a great way to help get Energy Cleaners out to people who need them and have some financial issues to deal with. And, of course, a great way to support Republic Broadcasting. Here's what you do. Send in a postcard. My address is John Moore, P.O. Box 201, Davidsville, Missouri. We pick a postcard every 2 weeks. If your postcard is drawn, you get the chance to buy the Energy Cleaner $70 off retail and 10% off the mattress pads. Put your name and your address, your telephone number and your email address on the postcard, and we wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendover.
Okay, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. J.R. Moore here on Wednesday, the 13th day of June. My website is thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. As of a few hours ago, we have something new on my website. Down the left side of my homepage, right below the spinning globe, you'll see a tile with a beautiful photograph of a waterfall there. This is me helping people find real estate in the Ozarks. And if you're looking for a piece of real estate in the Ozarks, if you'd like to be my neighbor, my contact information is there. Also, my website, of course, you'll find energy cleaners for sale. This is my home business. When you finally get tired of being tired, so to speak, not getting a great night's sleep, when you finally make that decision to get an energy cleaner, I'm here to help you. Energy cleaners are $285, shipping included, American zip codes, and mattress pads that go with them. They vary in price depending on what you want. We have twin, full, queen, king, California king, the handy travel size. Everything's right there at my website at thelibertyman.com, where I take PayPal, MasterCard, Visa. You can send me a check if you need to. And keep in mind, I have a 90-day money-back guarantee, so you're risking nothing when you buy your energy cleaner. I also have a toll-free line 24 hours a day. Here it is, 800-592-9543. Don't try to call me. You'll get my order takers only, 800-592-9543. Visiting with Jeff Nyquist. His website is jrnyquist.com, link to my links page. And we'll take your questions, calls, and comments here at Republic Broadcasting at 800-313-9443. Let's continue, Jeff.
Yeah. We were talking about George Marshall, who was, to explain to the audience, he was the chief of staff of the U.S. Army during World War II. Coincidentally, he became chief of the Army on September 1st, 1939, which was the day World War II started. And, of course, Senator Joseph McCarthy made a speech about him in which he listed the things he did to damage U.S. security and the U.S. position in the world. A really amazing speech. People should look it up.
They should. I agree. I agree.
Speeches. Yeah.
Jeff, we got a couple of callers on hold. We got Devin in Florida. Good morning, Devin.
Hello.
Devin, you're on the air. Go ahead. You're on the air, sir.
Oh yes, yes. Good morning, Don. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks again for taking my call. I just wanted to weigh on a couple of topics. One, North Korea. I totally agree with Jeff's position on the dangers of negotiating with totalitarian, aggressive totalitarian states. I thought it would be appropriate to share a defector's testimony, probably the highest level defector ever to leave North Korea via China, Hwang Yong-yop. Both of you probably remember him as the one who had a list of 50,000 names South Korean government who were intelligence sources for the North Koreans or agents of influence within the Seoul government. And he revealed that, and this is a quote, North Korea's agreement to the declaration of denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is a political ploy designed to portray North Korea in a peaceful light on the international stage and to elicit division within South Korea over the nuclear issue. The agreement has no significance politically for policymakers in North Korea. The negotiation and signing of the Nuclear Safety Accord, April 1992, Geneva Agreement, October 1994, parts of a North Korean strategy to buy time for itself. The North believes that it has profited from the two agreements based on guarantees to deliver the light water reactor and 500,000 tons of diesel fuel without incurring any losses on the political front. And basically, this is an example that it's a quote agreement or memorandum that was signed by between President Trump and Kim Jong-un was simply buying time for the Koreans, a sort of treaty of Brest-Litovsk, where the North Koreans can regroup their resources. American corporations like McDonald's are been in the press. They're indicating a willingness to invest in North Korea. American corporations, Monsanto and others, have done that as far back as the 90s. So I see this as preserving the North Korean state against potential instability. Now, it was interesting that Jeff also mentioned about the North Koreans, actually officials, believing this propaganda. There's a really good book that I would recommend to the both of you called North Korea Under Communism, Report of an Envoy Paradise, where it talks about a North Korean interpreter who was based at the embassy in East Berlin who traveled to Western countries that North Korea had relations with, like Sweden. And he talked about how he said that the interpreter came to reveal deep scorn he felt for these free societies, which were characterized by a lack of discipline and determination. He saw sloppiness everywhere, in the clumsy border controls and the crowds of people that obviously did not make work a priority and confusing traffic and the lack of a police and military presence on the streets and much besides, all things that for us are indicative of civilized democratic society. And it goes on and on. For the sake of time, I'm not going to read the whole thing. But just because, you know, individuals are based in the West as diplomats or they go to the West as negotiators doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be, quote, corrupted by bourgeois freedoms.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people in the West miss, that either people really do believe in their ideology, they can rationalize all the prosperity in the West, and they simply they're taught. They say it's a result of neocolonial oppression and extraction of resources from the third world. And they say, well, that's why, you know, the West seems so prosperous. It comes on the back of the exploitation of the workers and the third world countries and whatnot. And I think a lot of people don't realize that necessarily, I'm sure, for various reasons. And one last point, and I do appreciate your patience with me, concerning 2 weeks ago a column by Paul where he says that we should mimic National Socialist Germany and the suppressing communism. I think Jeff made a good point that I wanted to elaborate on. The National Socialists collaborated with the communists in for various reasons, including to bring down the Weimar Republic. As according to one statistic, 70% of the time Nazi and communist KPD legislators in the Reichstag cooperated and voted for the same legislation on various economic and political positions, whether on taxation, on tariffs, on confiscation of properties, adherence to the Dawes Plan and the Young Plan, et cetera, et cetera. They cooperated on various strikes in different industries in the Berlin Transport Company, very well known. The fact of the matter is, even in the 30s, during the anti-Comintern Pact period, you still had German firms in the Soviet Union trading with each other, in some cases strategic goods. There was even instances in 1934 where you had Lebedev, who was a top Soviet official, and NKVD officers visiting the Nazis and exchanging expertise on the structure of concentration camps and intelligence operations between the Gestapo. So the list goes on and on. Really, if you want, you know, if you really want, the best way to keep communism in check, in part, is through exposure. Exposure, exposure, and more exposure. And thank you so much for
okay.
letting me
thanks
speak.
For the call, Devin. Before we get the next caller, Jeff, your response, please, to Devin's call.
Well, that's excellent information that Nevin is giving us, and it is the truth, of course. Exposure of the truth is, of course, the number one aspect. Yes.
Okay. Our next caller is Mike in Virginia. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, every time I hear about World War II or military tactics, my ears perk up. And I just want to mention something about Lord Montgomery. After Rommel made a monkey out of him in the Middle East wars, he was desperate for some kind of move or some kind of thing to help him salvage
his
reputation.
Right, help his reputation. Right.
And so he came up with the harebrained Operation Market Garden. And there's so many variables that could go wrong, and most of them did. I mean, for God's sake, they dropped a good portion of the paratroopers right smack dab in the lap of a German Panzer Grenadiers and SS troops. And it was reliant on... it was also reliant on a armored. I don't know if it was a whole division, but it was reliant on armored troops linking up with the paratroopers, but they never made it.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I hate to make blanket statements, but the British Army in World War II was pretty much a joke. I mean, you know, they're noted for their mass surrender, you know, and evacuation, like in Dunkirk or Singapore.
Right. Right.
Like in, basically, the British were fighting World War II as if they were fighting Fuzzy Wuzzies, you know, as if they're fighting colonial war. And the commander at Singapore, he had several dozen Hawker Hurricanes that had arrived, you know, that was shipped in, and he he never had them assembled. And the British outnumbered the Japs by about 3 or 4 to 1. But the thing with that is, you know, they had them spread out too far. And I mean, it was, and the Japanese bluffed the Singapore commander into surrendering.
Right. Well, let's give Mike, thank you for your call. Let's give Jeff a chance to respond here, and we do appreciate your call. Thank you, sir. It sounds like we're refighting World War II all over again here this morning, Jeff.
Yeah. And I guess it's incumbent on me to defend the honor of the British Army. Well, first, I should say that the troops at Singapore weren't British. It was an Indian corps, and it was the New Zealand division. Australian division that was at Singapore. So that wasn't the British Army there. Of course, the Indian Army was part of the British Commonwealth.
Well, it was
British officers.
They may have been Indian nationals, but they were trained by British, equipped by British, used British tactics, so forth.
But it's not really fair to mention that battle because the Japanese had sunk 2 British battleships and had control of the air and the sea around Singapore. So Singapore was completely surrounded and cut off. And it's, I mean, what he says is, I don't know what particular action in that campaign he's mentioning, but overall the Japanese outnumbered the British or the Commonwealth troops. The Japanese came in with, as I recall it, with 4 divisions, and that is... well, roughly the same amount of troops defending, but the defending troops were cut out of supply and were cut off from land and sea. So that's not really fair. And to say that the British Army didn't fight hard, they beat Rommel at the Battle of El Alamein, and that was Montgomery, the first and second battles of El Alamein. So I'm not sure what he's talking about. And as far as mass surrenders, there were no mass surrenders of the British in World War II. They evacuated at Dunkirk. They evacuated at Greece. And the Battle of Crete, again, it was Australian and British troops. They killed, the Germans suffered, 4 out of 5 Germans were casualties in that battle. So I don't really know what he's talking about.
Right. Well, he maybe needs to do a little bit more homework there, but I think he means well. Okay. Well, Jeff, you know, getting back to the current day, we have the what's called the deep state. I think very few of these people are actually out-and-out communists. I believe the majority of them that are acting against our vital interests feel that they're actually patriotic Americans who are following orders to maintain their pension and their paycheck. In the meantime, they are, in fact, part of the deep state, carrying water for the deep state and actually helping the deep state to do what it wants to do. What do you think, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. You know, if you look at the Google definition of the deep state, it's a group of individuals who are trying to manipulate government policy to their own ends. I think this describes the communists, the Marxists, and the various fellow travelers and useful idiots that by which they do manipulate U.S. policy, and they cause us to make mistakes, which the Russians and the Chinese can exploit, and the North Koreans. So, and this is a long history. I think people need to know this history.
They do.
Of how this works.
They do. It goes back to the 1920s and 30s. We got our last caller here, Michael in New York. Got a break coming up, Michael. Let's hear it.
Good morning, JR. Good morning, Jeff. Yes, and just to verify or add more info to support Jeff's contention, Marshall possibly, most likely, based on the information Jeff's providing us, was a traitor. You know, then after World War II, we look at the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, where we're always getting our country, the United States, as a constitutional republic, independent, sovereign and separate from the rest of the world by 2 great oceans up to modern times. And We're always getting dragged into these foreign conflicts, which George Washington warned us not to do. But with the communism, the advent of communism is always, we got to stop communism or the Nazis so it doesn't come here. So hence after World War II, then the Korean, then the Vietnam, on and on, all these engagements. And yet, modern times, our government acknowledges Red China, brings them in as a legitimate country into the World Trade Union, and then we start supplying them with all kinds of technology, manpower to show them how to make modern technology and infrastructure. So it's all BS, gentlemen. It's always been BS. The ultimate controllers on the planet through their financial powers that they've have acquired through criminal
activity.
Okay.
Hold that thought, Michael. We got our last break here. We'll be right back. Everybody stay tuned.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
All right, we are back. Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here with Jeff Nyquist. His website is jrnyquist.com. Michael, let's conclude your comments so we can get a response from Jeff here.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. And so, Jeff, I think his contentions are 100% on the money because we can see right now that communism is the preferred mode for governing a country, totalitarianism. And since we've had Bush, Clintons, and Barry Satoro, we're going totally communist, socialist, fascist, communist, totally. And they even promote Mao Zedong. Barry Satoro said Mao Zedong was great. David Rockefeller said Mao Zedong was great. So, Jeff, I think you're 100% on the money.
Okay, Michael, thank you for your call. Well, you got a couple of gold stars on your chart here, Jeff.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. Yeah, it's and in mixed company, if you say these things, you're going to make some people very angry.
Oh yes.
Yeah, it's you know, there are the way that George Marshall was lionized and made into a hero, and of course he never led combat troops. One of the things about George Marshall is he should never have been the chief of staff of the army, because when he was earlier in his career and he wanted to be promoted to general, he wrote to his previous mentor, who was General Pershing, and he said, look, I'm stuck here. I'm a lieutenant colonel. I can't get anywhere. Pershing went to MacArthur, who was at that time the head of the chief of staff of the U.S. Army. And MacArthur said, well, he's not commanded troops. So they gave him command of the very best regiment in the U.S. Army, and it became one of the worst regiments. So he didn't get the promotion, and whatever command he went to, he was not successful, but he got promotion by meeting Eleanor Roosevelt and by meeting Harry Hopkins, who were the ones that introduced him to FDR and got him promoted.
Yeah, I knew FDR had to play a big role in this, because that would be a political appointment by the president. So that
yes,
makes perfect sense.
Yes, it was
sense.
FDR, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how he wasn't the right military choice at all.
Well, it's a sad commentary, but that's what we've got, and we don't know what deals were made behind the scenes or what the true motivations were, other than George Marshall was a complete disaster and should never have been in that position. He should have been retired at lieutenant colonel, where he could do no harm.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. He was, for the audience, George Marshall was chief of staff of the Army. He was secretary of state and secretary of defense he served.
He was the first secretary of defense, wasn't he?
Yes, he. I think that's right. He became secretary of defense right in 1950. So that was about the time the Defense Department formed. There might have been one before him. I'd have to check. But,
okay.
Yeah, the Defense Department was just forming then.
Pretty amazing. Well, we need to know this history, because the same things are taking place in this country ever since, haven't they?
Yes, they have, and it's important to understand these things, I think.
It really is. Jeff, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll have you back next Wednesday.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, that's it for the day. Getting medical supplies, energy, cleaning, essential oils. Now, while you can, your firearms, ammunition, never, ever give up your guns. Please do have a fun, safe, productive day. And God bless America.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations. A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands. And a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.